Welcome everyone to CS50's first walkthrough. These walkthroughs will be every Sunday in Emerson, which is the room we're in right now, but we're also being videotaped, and the videos will go up probably by the next day, latest by Tuesday or Wednesday. So you can choose to watch these online, or you can come in person, and it'll be a fun, interactive experience. So we encourage you to come in person. Thank you all for coming on a Sunday night. You'll find that these will be very helpful in getting you started with the problem set. So first I'll introduce myself. I'll be leading these every week. So my name is Marta Bralick. I'm a junior in the college. I live in Adams House. I'm a government concentrator with a minor in computer science. I took CS50 my freshman year. I took it for a quantitative reasoning requirement. Absolutely fell in love with the class, as I'm sure many of you will. And I came back to TF last year. I did these walkthroughs last year, and I'm returning to do them again. So it's my second year as a TF, second year doing walkthroughs, and I also teach a section. So some of you will actually be in my section. So we're going to get started. First, I just want to describe sort of the purpose of walkthroughs so you can see if they will help you. So I already discussed the when. There's videos, but we're in Emerson from 7 to 8:30. We'll either be in 108 or 105, so you'll get information about that, but they'll always be in Emerson. So the purpose of these walkthroughs will be to guide you through the week's assignment, to answer any questions, anything that's unclear, anything you might anticipate getting stuck on or being confused by. And then the most important part, we'll break down each of the assignments into small parts, into manageable pieces, which I think is a theme of this class, sort of taking one big challenging problem and breaking it down into smaller problems that you can solve much more easily. So that'll sort of be the purpose. I will not write code during the walkthroughs. So the code is all up to you. I'll write a lot of pseudocode, most likely. We'll also look at code that's very similar and examples that will really help you and examples that will be very similar to the problem set, but I won't be able to write actual code. So when you ask questions, don't ask anything like, well, how do I actually write that? Because that's, of course, the challenge before you guys. So you'll find these will be very helpful. I hope you'll continue to come. Are there any questions about walkthroughs? This is not a substitute for section or lecture. This is simply focused on the problem set because sections are not meant to cover the problem set. Neither are lectures. Those you'll learn more of the concepts, more of the code and go over exercises, and this is specifically focused on the problem set. Any questions? Yes? Are the walkthrough what?
PowerPoints.
So the question was, will the walkthrough PowerPoints go online? Yes, they will. Any other questions? Okay, cool. So the first thing people usually ask when thinking about CS50 problem sets or CS50 in general is grading. So how will problem sets be graded? They're graded along three axes: correctness, design, and style. Usually each of the three axes is given a maximum of five points, but sometimes you'll see they might be out of 3 points. So I put 3 to 5. It's usually 5. For this first problem set, you might see it be out of 3 points, so just something to note. So correctness is, did you follow the specifications? Did you do everything that we told you to do in that long spec document? So you have to, that's sort of the first thing you check. Did I do everything the problem set asked? Pretty self-explanatory. We also looked at you lack bugs. So a lot of time for correctness, we run a script on it and we get back a score. So for a lot of the problem sets. So this is very not subjective. This is very, does your code work? You guys can test. You guys should be able to sort of anticipate your correctness score every time you submit a problem set. So make sure we check corner cases. So, what happens if we feed your program a negative number? Will it still work? Will it handle that? Those kinds of things are things you want to check because that goes into your correctness score. Design score. So design is your code clear? Is it efficient? Is it elegant? Is it logical? So design is something that you'll acquire. So you'll acquire being good at design. Good at correctness is kind of, did you do the problem set right? Good at design is more, did you do it the best way that you could have possibly done it? So thinking about, using fewer CPU cycles, and we'll learn about all this, not doing extra work, doing it in a smart way, using loops instead of iteration, that kind of thing. That's design. It'll also be out of 3 to 5 points. And then there's style. So style is, did you comment your code? Did you indent your code? Are your variables well named? Basically, this is synonymous with readability. Is your code easy to read? And can someone looking at your code know what it does without, looking too deep or without trying too hard to figure it out? And here, your TFs will love you if your style is very good, because it'll be much easier for us to read your problem sets. So There's really no excuse to not do well on style, because all it takes is sticking to a few clear guidelines, which are in the CS50 style guide, which is linked right here. And you can, you know, find that website from cs50.net, work your way there, and just make sure you know those. So those are basic, you know, when to indent, when to comment. Basically, any block of code should be commented enough that your TF will know what that block of code does without reading the code. And you can, a great source of, you know, a sort of style examples are David's source code from lecture. So all that is commented adequately, so that's a very good guide. And your TFs might give you more specific guidelines based on, you know, what they're looking for style. And then you'll see when you get your prom set grades that they'll be marked on this scale, so poor, fair, good, better, best. So that's from 1 to 5. So 3, you see, is good. So 3 in, by no means correlates to a C. This isn't ABCDF. It's simply not. It's poor, fair, good, better, best. A 3 is a good score. So if you are getting 3s out of 5, that's still a good score. Of course, you know, you could be better and you could be best, but a 3 is a good score. So you'll see as you get the first prom sets back, you might not have completely grasped good design or good style, or you might have had, you know, a few bugs or not followed a few of the specifications. You might see 3s coming up, and don't be discouraged by this. You know, most students will start off with this good category, and we really don't just say this. We really do mean that this is good. Any questions about grading? Any questions? Okay, so let's dive into Prom Set 1. Did you guys like Scratch? Did you like Prom Set 0? Did you have fun? Okay, so Prom Set 1 is a lot less graphical. It's a lot less pretty. You're going to be using the Linux environment and the command line environment, which are kind of the opposite of Scratch in some ways, because there's nothing colorful or pretty about them. But we're going to do a basic introduction. This is basically what the prom set is, and it's also our agenda for today. So Linux and the command line environment, you'll be introduced to this thoroughly in the prom set, and I'll run down, you know, the key points in this walkthrough. Oh Hi Nano, that's your first C program for most of you. This will be the first thing you ever write in C. So we'll do that. And then we'll do Free Candy. That's sort of the first big problem after your Hello World type program. And Hello World is just a geeky term geeks use. So Free Candy will be your first problem. Time for Change will be your second. And I Saw You, based on I Saw You Harvard, will be the third. So those are kind of the three big problems you have to do, as well as this introduction to C programming through Oh Hi Nano and to Linux and the command line. So that's our agenda. Any questions on that? Okay. So Linux and the command line. So plenty of resources on CS50's website. So cs50.net/resources, you will see how to access Linux. So you guys aren't running Linux, most of you. Most of you are running Mac OS, or you're working on a PC and running Windows. So for those using a Mac, you'll have Terminal most likely already on your Mac. I use a Mac, so my demos are all in Terminal. And Terminal allows you to connect to Linux. And then PuTTY is the PC or the Windows equivalent. So if you use a PC, you'll want to use PuTTY. And these resources and instructions on how to download. For Mac, you already have Terminal, or you should already have Terminal. For PCs, you have to actually download PuTTY. So instructions are on CS50's website. If you have any problems with that, TFs can also help you at office hours. But you should be able to follow those instructions and download those programs. And that's the environment you'll be working in. So you'll run PuTTY or you'll run Terminal when doing your problem sets. So once you run PuTTY or Terminal, you'll get your command line. So these are some basic commands. I think David went through all of these in lecture, and they're also all pretty well kind of, you already kind of have a walkthrough through these commands in the actual problem set spec. But we're actually going to look at SSHing and stuff right now. So this is my Terminal window. So let me zoom in so you can see that better. Chris, can you see that on camera? Is that all right? Okay. So I'm just going to SSH, so you type SSH, and then your username at cloud.cs50.net. So not fast.harvard, not college. You do actually .cs50.net. You hit enter. It's going to ask you for a password. Now, everyone has a CS50 generated password. We just generated random passwords for you since we don't know your FAS passwords or your college passwords. So you're going to go to cs50.net/me. And you will log in there and then see your password from CS50, you're going to type that password in here. I already changed my password because I'm not going to memorize my random one, and you guys will have instructions on how to change yours as well. So I'm going to type in my password. As you can see, the prompt doesn't move. That doesn't mean I'm not typing. That just means that it's not actually moving, but it still read, got my password. So I just hit enter. Even though the cursor didn't move, just hit enter after you've typed your password. If you typed it wrong, it'll give you an attempt to retry. And then you're logged in to cs50.net. So that's nice. So some people are trying to go to cloud.cs50.net on the internet. Don't do that. You can only access it through this kind of environment, so through terminal or PuTTY. So once you're in CS50, now you can create your PSET1 directory. So I actually already have a PSET1 directory, but if I didn't, I would type mkdir space PSET1. So that stands for make directory. Kind of just take out some of the vowels and make it shorter. So make mkdir and then space PSET1. You'll get a PSET1 directory. And then if you want to enter that directory, what do? CD, exactly. So you CD PSET1. Now, see how my prompt has changed? I'm now not just in my home directory, I'm in home/PSET1. What if I want to go back to home? Someone said CD dot. Is that it? CD dot dot, exactly. So CD dot is the directory I'm in right now. So that wouldn't actually take me anywhere. CD dot dot is the parent directory of the directory I'm in. So it's kind of like going back. So it's going up one. So now my prompt has changed again. How do I find out what directory I'm in right now? PWD, exactly. What does that stand for? Present working directory, yeah. PWD. So now it's going to tell me that I'm in home/mbrealic, which is my cloud account. And it should be the same as your FAS account, same as your college account. So that's kind of navigating directories. Any questions on that? Okay. So once you've navigated directories, so now I'm in my home directory, and I actually have, okay, so now if I want to create a new file, I'm going to use nano. Do you guys know nano from lecture? Okay, so how do I create a file in nano? How do I create hello.c? What do I type? Anyone? Nano hello.c, exactly. Okay, so now I have a new file. I can type all sorts of things. This is actually what you're going to be doing in the first part for Hello World. You're going to type a program here. And when I want to exit, that's Control X. And I actually have for you nano-hi1.c. Do you guys remember this from lecture, hi1? It's the most basic program you could possibly write. This is kind of called a Hello World program. And you can see here, all it is including one header file to use the standard input-output library. And then you have main. This should actually be, so this is straight from lecture, but for good practice, we'll put in a void. Because that function returns a void. You guys will learn more about that. But for now, the part that's most valuable here is the printf, right? Because what's printf doing here? Anyone? Right, it's going to print this statement out. So the first part of this problem set is actually just going to be printing out a Hello World type of program. So you're going to go nano hello.c, and I just showed you hi1.c, which is basically what you have to do, but you should get more creative with it. So you should change hi1.c as much as possible, put in some personality, put in your own phrase, but that's really all you have to do for the first. So this is going to be in your PSET1 directory, and things that you wanted, and then you have to compile it, right? So once you've written hello.c, do you have a program yet? Not really, right? So you have to compile it. So GCC is a compiler. So once you use GCC, why do I have this dash O there? What if I had just done GCC hello.c? Yes, so you'd have a file called a.out. So all this dash O does is it lets you rename your file. So GCC dash O hello. Hello.c will name the compiled program based on what you wrote in hello.c. It will name it hello, and then you can run hello. Does that make sense? So how do you run hello? You have to tell it what directory it's in. So it's in dot, right? Because dot represents where you are right now. So ./hello will run the hello program. So this is all you have to do for the first part of this problem set. So once you're set up in the cloud, and once you've written this, you've written your first C program, and you've compiled it, and you have a running program. You're all programmers already. Any questions on that part of the problem set? Yes?
So are you changing it from hello.c to hello, the name?
So the question was, are you changing it from hello.c to hello, the name? Hello.c will still exist. Hello.c is the code that you wrote. It's uncompiled. So once you compile it, if you didn't have this name changing that you're doing, you would have a file called a.out, which would be an executable file that you can kind of like the equivalent of double-clicking on a window on your computer. So you would have a file that you can actually run. This will just rename a.out hello, so you won't have an a.out. Because if you think about it, if you made 10 programs, you know, you want to be able to distinguish them, so you want to name them. So this is how you do that. Yes?
So is a.out
the default name, yes. It'll be named if you don't use this switch. Any other questions? Yes? Okay, so GCC is the compiler that you use. Make is something that CS50 created for you through a make file. And CS50 is allowing you to skip typing this with other switches. So this -o is kind of like a, it's a specifier, right, that you're trying to rename it. So when you do make hello, it's doing this for you. So it's kind of like a program that CS50 wrote. The reason we wrote that for you is because it gets even more complicated than just GCC-O, hello, hello.c. Had you used other libraries, like the math library to use some math functions, you would have had to include another thing that said -L math. Had you used the CS50 library, which you will, you would have to include -L CS50. So to prevent you from having to remember all these things, we simplified it for you, letting you just use make. Any other questions? Yes? Once you're in nano, how do you get back to the prompt was the question. So you just do control X, and you should be right in the command line environment. Control X, and then at the bottom it'll ask you, do you want to save? So you'll do yes, or Y for yes, and then you should be back. Yes, did you have a question?
How do you just save without X?
I think it's control O, I want to say. Does anyone know? I never use it. I always X out. I think it's, you can look that up. You can Google it. Sorry. Any other questions? Okay, let's move on. So the first problem you'll have to do after that is free candy. But seriously, we have free candy for you. In the CS50 lounge in Maxwell Dworkin, room G123, there's a candy machine. And we restock it, and there's a lot of free candy. It's one of those machines that you think you have to put a quarter in, but for CS50 you don't. So free candy. But also because of that, we've actually written a problem set about this. So let's say that you wanted to guess how many Skittles were in the Skittles machine. And let's say we're all really fascinated by this question. And we want to create a program that'll make it easier for us to kind of create this guessing game. And that's exactly what you're going to do for your first program. So this is going to be called Skittles.c. Just like before we had hello.c, here you're going to write your code in Skittles.c. So that means you're going to do nano, Skittles.c, and that's where you're going to start. So there are several parts to this, three main parts. So the first is pseudo-random number generation. Why did I say pseudo-random and not random? Anyone? Yes. You're using an algorithm to come up with a random number. But why? Why can't we just come up with a random number off the top of our heads? Well, a computer can't. So a computer actually can't come up with a number off the top of its head. It has to be given something to start with. So it'll use some complicated calculations to come up with a number that seems random or is pseudo-random, but it's not actually random at all. So if you just were to run the function that'll do this is rand, the first function there. If you just ran rand, you would always get the same number. So it's kind of ironic, right? You're using a random number generator to get the same number every time. So that's where srand comes in. So srand is a way to seed rand, because rand uses the seed, which defaults to 1, and then it performs calculations on the seed to create a random number. or a number that you perceive to be random. But if the seed is always 1, the random number is always going to be 1. So we're going to use srand to actually give it an alternate seed. Okay, and we'll go through an example of this actually on the next slide, so don't worry about that too much now. But the reason we need a pseudo-random number is because the program asks you to come up with a number from 0 to 1023 for the number of Skittles. And then the user will have to guess between 0 and 1023 how many Skittles there are. Okay, so you need to come up, that's sort of the first part of the problem set, coming up with that random number. And so the seed you're going to use, there's no real perfect seed to use, right? And the closest we can get is the time. So the current time in seconds is a great seed because you'll get a new random number every second. So of course you can optimize this more and more, but for the purposes of this problem set, time null, and don't worry about null right now, but time parentheses null will give you the current time in seconds. So you're going to feed that to srand, to seed srand, or to seed rand, sorry. And then when you run rand, you'll get a new number every second. Okay? Do you guys know what modulo is? Okay, so modulo looks like a percent sign. Okay, it is a percent sign. You type the percent sign. And x modulo y, or x percent y, is equal to the remainder when x is divided by y. So this is a very valuable operation in computer science. You often want to know the modulo value. For example, to find out if a number is even. Well, if number x modulo 2 is 0, that number is even. So that's sort of the first part. And don't worry, we're going to dive into this. I just want to cover everything that's involved in Skittles.c. So we're taking input from the user at the command line. So for this, we're going to have to prompt them for their input. And that's where we'll use a printf, right, to print something to the screen telling them, pick a random number or give me a number between 0 and 1023. As your guess. So we're going to have to prompt the user. And then when they type something, we're going to store that. We're going to get that information from the user by using getInt, which is a function that CS50 wrote. This doesn't exist. This is in the CS50 library. So we're giving it to you. It doesn't exist normally because we don't want you to worry about the command line just yet. And we're going to have to loop through this, right? Because the person isn't just asked one time to pick a number as their guess. They're asked over and over because they're presumably going to guess wrong, right? So if they guess wrong, nope, guess again, that kind of thing. So we're going to loop through that. Again, we're going to delve right into the story. And so to do either of these two things, to use these random functions and to use getInt, for example, we're going to have to use these libraries. We're going to have to use the CS50 library, standard IO, standard lib, and the time library to get time null. So we're going to learn how to include header files that will give you access to their libraries. So the next slide will already explain a lot. Here's some free code for you for the problem set free candy. The top part, what's the top part doing? The first 4 lines of this program. Okay, so the answer that was given was including the libraries. We're not exactly including the libraries technically because these .h files are header files. They don't actually include the entire library. They give us access to the library through the header files. So just technically speaking, we're not including the libraries, we're including their header files, which gives us access to all of these libraries. Great, so that's what the first part is doing. So we've already accomplished a big chunk of this problem, which is getting access to these libraries just by including them just like this. So exactly the way it is right there. And then we have this main function. And this is actually code that this whole slide, like I said, free code, you can use this in Skittles.c. In fact, you should use this in Skittles.c. So you should absolutely copy and paste this, or type this since it's going to be on a PDF, into Skittles.c. And you can use this. So what is this doing here? What is this main function doing right now? And you can tell from the comments, right? So all I'm asking you to do is read out the comments. Anyone? If you know how to read, you should raise your hand. Okay, I'll read it. So the first one is seeding the pseudo-random number generator. So srand time null means when I call rand, use the seed time null, which is the current time in seconds. Does that make sense? This is the seed we were talking about before. We don't want the default seed of 1 because we'll always get the same random number. Won't be a fun game. We don't really want to pick a random seed because that's just us seeding it with the same number every time. So this is a more dynamic way of doing it. So we're seeding with the current time. Then the second part, you're picking the random number. So the first part just tells rand what seed to use. This actually runs rand and picks a number for you. So what is Skittles in this line of code? What is Skittles? It's a variable. Great. What type is it? It's an integer. Exactly. So int Skittles is the integer variable that will store the random number of Skittles. Why can't we just do rand here? Why do we do this weird thing here? What are we doing? Anyone? Go ahead.
It might be really high.
It might be really high, exactly. So we're limited to numbers between 0 and 1023 by the specs of the problem, of the problem set. So we want to, so what am I doing here? What's, what is this line of code doing?
If we're doing a hash list of 1024, then it's going to give you something between 0 and 1023.
Exactly, and why is that? Someone else. Why? Oh, sorry, the answer for the video. The answer was it's going to give you the modulo, the random number modulo 1024 is going to give you a number between 0 and 1023. And my question is why? Yes?
The remainder will always be less than 1024.
The remainder will always be less than 1024, exactly. So if you divide, if rand right now is 1024, you'll get 0. If rand is 1023, you'll get 1023. What about a negative number? So rand will return a positive number. Yeah.
Do you always have to use integers with the modulo?
Do you always have to use integers with modulo? When would it not be an integer?
I mean, like in general, outside of the random number, can you ever use it with a decimal number?
The question was, can you ever use it with a decimal number? But the remainder will never be a decimal. Right? Because the remainder is however much is left over when you divide. Right? It's not that over 1024. So it's not a fraction. It's an integer. Right? Any other questions? Okay, so what's this to do here? What do you guys have to do? You got all this free code. Now what do you have to do? So now you have a random number stored in Skittles that's between 0 and 1023. You've done the first part. You've included your libraries. You've done another part. Now what do you have to do? Yes, exactly. Now you have to ask the user to guess a number. So how are you going to ask? This is what you have to do, actually. And this is the staff solution. You don't have to do it exactly like this. This is not a formula. In fact, we encourage you to add your own personality to the problem. So the only thing that's required is that you make a user guess numbers between 0 and 1023 and that the program ends when they guess the number. But anything else is up to you. So you don't have to do these things like, nope, don't be difficult, guess again. You don't have to do this. You can add your own personality to your program. But basically, you have to keep prompting the user until they come up with the correct number. So how might you do this? What are some building blocks? What are some pieces of code that you're going to need to accomplish this? You're going to need a loop. Exactly. What kind of loop might you need? So there are different kinds of loops, right? Throw out different kinds of loops.
While,
for. Good. Those are, I mean, those are the main ones. There's do while. Which one might seem appropriate for this?
While.
Great. Who said while? Why?
Because while the number is less, well, it generates a random number.
Right.
So you want they guess less than, as long as they guess less than.
Skittles. The variable Skittles. Okay, so for the video, the answer was you need to keep asking them while the number that they guessed is less than the variable Skittles or more, right? So you can have it separately. You can say if it's less, you can say something like that's too little. And if it's more, you can say that's too much. Or you can just have one that says nope, sorry. So basically, it's up to you what personality your program has. But a while loop sounds like a great option in this case. Does anyone have another option, another solution? Okay, yes?
You
Yes. You can use a do, the answer was you can use a do while to prompt them the first time. Exactly. So you will, if you choose to use a while loop, you will have to have a statement before the while loop explaining and prompting them the first time. So you'll say something like, there are, or here, oh hi, I'm thinking of a number between 0 and 1023, what is it? Or you can say, guess how many Skittles there are here, I'll give you a hint, it's between 0 and 1023. But you have to prompt them the first time. So you can choose to do that with a do while loop. But of course, if you do it in a do while loop, then you'll always have the same text reappearing,
right?
Because it'll do whatever printf you have, right, to print that text. It'll do that once, and then it'll keep doing it while they're not giving the right answer. That's totally fine. You can do that. If you want to vary your text, you'll just have the printf once, and then you'll have varying while loops depending on what their input is. Great. So we're prompting the user. We're using a loop. That's great. And how are we storing whatever the user says? How are we storing the user's input? How are we getting what they actually type?
Get int,
exactly. So here is kind of, I wanted you guys to come up with it, but in case you didn't, I have it all on the slide. So printf is what you're using to tell the user that they have to guess a number and explain the game. Get int is what you're using to actually store their information. And the thinking is what you're doing with the loop that we just discussed. You're thinking, the program is thinking, oh, is this number correct? Does that match my variable Skittles? What do I do if it doesn't? Is it less? Is it more? Is it equal? Okay. So for the get int part, this is a get int example from lecture. You're going to ask the user for an integer, we use a printf, just like was said. In this case, it's giving me an integer between 1 and 10, but yours will be different because you're looking for something different. And then you just, what is the next line doing? This int n equals get int. What's that doing? What's int n equals get int doing? It's storing the user's, whatever the user typed in, into the variable n. And then what is this block of code commented as judge user's input doing? Take a look at it, and then raise your hand. What is that block of code doing? Yes?
It
kind of sorts it. So it evaluates what the user just put in, and it compares it to some value that you're looking for, right? So in this case, it's comparing it to see if it's between 1 and 3, because that's what it decided to be a small number. So in your case, you're not comparing it to between 1 and 3. You're comparing it to what? To what variable that we've seen? Skittles. Exactly. You're comparing the user input, let's say n, but you could probably name it, you know, guess or something like that. Use your own variable names that make sense to you. And you're comparing guess to the actual value. Okay? And you're doing different things. Yes?
So get int is predefined to always wait for user input?
Yes. So CS50 wrote get int. The question was get int is already made to wait for the user input? Yes. So the user cannot type anything for 2 minutes and it's still fine. So you don't have to worry about that. We've simplified it down for you. I think if the course is the same as last year, we're going to take away that building block soon. You're going to have to do it yourself. But don't worry about that yet. Any other question?
Okay.
So of course, in this case, you're using if and then else if, else if, else. But in our case, like we said, we're going to need some sort of a loop. Okay. So don't use this example too literally. Any other questions on get int? Okay. Oh, there was a question, sorry.
So if you use a while loop and you say, what's going to stop it once you put your guess in? It's going to react to that. What's going to stop it from just continuing to loop from that original guess?
From which original guess?
So, like, once you put your first guess in, mm-hmm. you have it in a while loop. Like, I don't know how much I can.
Okay. So the question was, what's going to prevent it from just taking the first guess that you gave and keep looping forever?
Yeah.
Is that correct? Okay. So once you. Yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but once you get the guess from the person, you're going to have to do what? Once you get the guess, what do you have to do? You're using getInt again, right? Every time you get a guess. So while the guess isn't correct, you're going to keep prompting the user. You're going to keep using what? Louder? You're in a loop, but what's inside the loop? What code? GetInt, right. So you're going to keep using getInt. And when you're using getInt, you keep what? You keep storing what the user typed in, right? So you're going to replace the user's guess every time they guess. So eventually, that variable, guess, or n in this case, is going to change. And then the while loop will stop entering. Clear? Any other questions? Okay. So it's time for change. The second part, so that was the first part. That's Skittles. So we have already gotten accommodated with Linux and the command line. We've written hello.c. We've written skittles.c. We've probably taken a break or two. And now we're doing change. So change will ask you to, I guess before, I'll tell you just in English what the problem set asks you to do. So it asks you to implement an algorithm that will tell you the fewest amount of coins that you need to return a certain amount of change. So if I'm a cashier and I need to return 41 cents to somebody, what goes through my head? That's not a rhetorical question. What goes through my head? If I'm returning change to a customer at a store, I need to return 41 cents. What do I do? You start with quarters. Great. So that's the most logical. You take the biggest bite of the problem out that you possibly can to reduce the size of the problem, right? So I take out how many quarters? One. I take out one quarter. Now how many cents do I have left? 16. Exactly. And then what do? I take out a dime, exactly. And then how many cents do I have left? Six. And then what do?
Nickel.
And then a penny, right? Okay, great. So you're going to end up with how many coins? Four. You're going to end up with four coins to give back 41 cents of change. So basically, you're going to create a program. It doesn't have to tell you what coins. It just has to tell you how many coins you'll actually have to give back. And you want to find the least number of coins. So you would never start with pennies, right? In this algorithm, you always start with the greatest amount of the problem. And I think the problem set tells you specifically, I'm pretty sure the biggest amount of change you can use is a quarter. So 25 cents will be your max. So some building blocks for this. So getFloat is another CS50 function. It's just like getInt, except it accepts decimals. So getInt will only accept whole numbers. GetFloat will accept decimals. So I have to return. It's going to ask me, you're going to ask the user how much change needs to be returned. And because we're using getFloat, they can type 9.71 for $9.71. You don't have to worry about if they put a dollar sign before it or anything like that. So this will accept decimal values. And you're going to want to convert those decimal values to cents. Why? Okay, because you don't actually want to work with floats, because floats have sort of garbage values at the end of them, so they never really end. So they'll have, if you had 1.00, that number could actually be stored under the hub as 1.00000001, and that could eventually mess your program up, right, that little one at the end. So you want to always convert to cents. So you want to round it. You don't want to truncate. So to learn how to use this round function, you're going to see it's man page. What does that mean? What's a man page? It's the manual, right? So you're going to run man round, or you'll probably run man three round, I believe, because the actual explanation of how you do that is in the third section of the manual. So I think it's man three round, man three round it should be. And that will tell you exactly how to use round. And one of the things that it'll tell you, but I'll tell you now because you might skim over it and get tricked up, to be careful that round returns a double. You don't want to work with doubles. You want to cast it to an int. Okay, so don't worry too much about it. Just know that you have to cast to an int. So you're going to have to learn how to do that cast. Okay, so you're going to get the input from the user as a float. You're going to write a printf asking them for input. You're going to get their input as a float. You're going to round that, and you're going to cast it to an int. And then you're going to have an integer value, which is what? It's the number of cents that need to be returned. Okay? So, of course, when I say round, that's presupposing that you've multiplied by 100 to get cents, right? Okay. So in this case, you don't just ask the user for input and take that input and run with it. You want to actually check that the user is giving you valid input. So you want to make sure that what? It says it right there. If you can read, raise your hand. Yeah, you want to make sure it's not negative, because you can't return a negative amount of change. Okay, great. So how are we going to check that they're not returning a negative amount of change? It's very similar to how we checked their input in Skittles. A loop, exactly. You're going to loop through. And what kind of loop might it be, maybe?
While.
A while loop, maybe. Or a do while loop, maybe, up to you. But you're going to want to make sure that at the end of asking user input, you have stored a number, which is an integer value for the number of cents, and it's obviously non-negative. And then you're going to have to run the algorithm on it. So the algorithm is called a greedy algorithm, and it's what we just went through. So 41 cents is four coins. It's a quarter, a dime, a nickel, and a penny. Like we said, we're going to use a loop here as well. So how might we implement, so this algorithm we just talked about, which is let me see, you know, how many quarters I'm going to give, how many dimes I'm going to give, how many nickels I'm going to give, and how many pennies I'm going to give to this customer. You're going to have to implement this through some sort of loop, right, to figure out what coins you're going to give. So I leave it up to you, the implementation of this and, you know, choosing what kind of loop. There are two main ways to do it, are either by dividing and using modulo, right? So if you divide 41 by 25, you'll find out how many quarters to use, because division won't, division with integers won't give you a decimal. So if I divide 41 by 25, what'll it give me? It'll truncate. So what is it going to give me? One, exactly. In C, if you're dividing integers and you divide 41, because right, I've converted this to an integer number of cents, it's not a decimal anymore. If I divide 41 by 25, I get the integer 1. So I know 1 quarter. And then I need to figure out how much change I still have to give, which is the remainder, right? That's where modulo comes in. That's one approach. Another approach is just using simple subtraction. So how, which is, right, division is just repeated subtraction. So you can create a loop that keeps subtracting until it can't subtract anymore. So how many quarters can I subtract before I, you know, run out of money, or how many dimes can I subtract? Good? Okay, so those are two ways of doing it. There are others. We encourage you always to come up with your own creative solutions. And so, great. So I'm finding out how much change to give back. I don't need to keep track of what the actual coin is. I only need to keep track of how many coins. So how am I going to do that? It says it right there. There's a theme here. Yeah. Counter, exactly. So you're going to use a counter variable that's going to count the number of coins. So every time the program has decided I can give a quarter right now, you can forget that it's a quarter. You just need to say that you're giving back one coin, right? And make sure a common pitfall is you forget to update the amount of change you're giving back. So make sure when you give back a quarter, you've either subtracted a quarter or you've moduloed out the quarter. The question was, you can just print one quarter? No. I mean, you have to keep track in memory of how many coins you've given out. And then at the end, you print out how many coins. You don't say one quarter. You just say four. Like, because we're automating your tests, we want your ultimate answer to just be four for this question. Yeah. So you just want to say four. We don't care what coins. We know that you know what coins if you've gotten the right answer, unless you've somehow guessed every time, which isn't possible. So yeah, you're storing in memory. You're not printing at any point until the end. I mean, you're printing while you're asking user input, but you're not printing like, I just gave a quarter, I just gave a dime. You're not doing that. Actually, what it looks like, oh no, I don't have it. But in the problem set, you see what it actually looks like. Yeah. Oh, no question. Okay. Anyone else? Yes.
So it's just quarters, dimes.
I believe it's just quarters, dimes, nickels, pennies, yeah. Read through the problem set, as always, you should read through carefully. But yeah, I don't think, no, like half dollar or dollar coins. Yeah. Yeah, so the question was, is it just quarters, dimes, nickels, pennies? Yes. Standard coins. Any other question? Okay, because this completes greedy. So we're 3/4, maybe 3/5, or 4/5 if you count setting up Linux in the cloud, done with the problem set. So the last part is, I call it stalking, it's I Saw You Harvard. And this was made, as you guys know, by a CS50 alum for her final project. Got really popular, people love using it. Here, okay, so you guys know isawyouharvard.com. Basically, you say who you've spotted, and then there's some statistics available on the website. So male spotting female spotting female, male spotting male. Those are the four axes, or four variables, I guess, on this graph here. And you guys are going to implement a much uglier version of this graph for kind of getting used to working within the within your terminal or within your PuTTY window. So we're going to ask you to basically implement this graph using just hashtags and some simple text. So it's basically an exercise in which function? Printf, exactly. That's how we've been printing to the screen this entire time. So basically, this is what you want it to look like. Your program is, you're going to write it in chart.c, and it's going to be called chart. You're going to run it as chart. And it should ask the user how many males are spotting females. And the user is going to type in whatever is in bold here. So the user is going to type in 3, for example. You're going to ask how many females are spotting males. The user is going to type in a number, et cetera, et cetera. And then you're going to print out who is spotting whom, and then you're going to make this kind of graph where it's the label and then a new line and then your bar and then the label, new line, bar, label, new line, bar, label, new line, bar. So we ask that the last 8 lines of your program be exactly this. I mean, obviously not the same number of hashtags, obviously, but we ask that you make that exactly the same because, again, we are running tests of your code that are automated. Above that, you can have as much text and personality as you want. We don't really care. Okay? So chart.c, what are some things that we're going to have to do? So again, user input, and again, it has to be non-negative. So you're going to very much use what you just learned by doing greedy and by doing Skittles to get the user input and to make sure it's non-negative, because we can't have a negative number of people spotting other people. So then this is kind of the mathy part of this problem. So you have to calculate these percentages. So let's say the user input is 5500 for whatever it was, male spotting female. So that means that each of these fives is 50% of the 10 total spottings, right? So you need to calculate this number and store it in a variable. You need to know what percent, right? And then you need to make sure that the bar's length is that percent of the total length of the width of the screen. And what's the width of the screen? It's on the slide, like every other question I've asked. What's the width of the screen? 80 hashtags can fit across the screen. So if you have 5500, how many hashtags are you going to draw for the first two bars? 40, exactly. It's going to be 40, 40, 0, 0. So I chose an easy example, but you guys have to make sure that your program works on any example. So a bit of math there. Yes, question. The question was, you should label each line so that we can read the code without actually implementing it. That's a paraphrase, but what it actually, what that means is you should comment each line of your code that you write. So commenting is //, and then you write a comment, and that's not code, that's just English text. And you have to write enough comments that we should be able to tell what program you've written just by glancing over it without having to run it. So I shouldn't have to run this program to know that it's going to create a graph of the number of sightings. Any other questions? Okay, so once we've calculated how many hashtags we have to draw, we actually have to draw them, right? So as with anything, that doesn't happen only once. So we don't want just one hashtag and it's always going to change. What kind of construct are we going to use? What are we going to create here? Again, it's on the slide. A loop, exactly. So you're going to use a loop to make sure that you have the right number of hashtags. So you're going to put the label, which is like male spotting female, colon. You're going to hit a new line, so like /n. This is all in a printf, right, that you're very familiar with by now. And this loop is going to go through and make sure you print x number of hashtags, where x is the appropriate number that you've just calculated, and it's stored in a variable. So you're going to have to use a loop that makes sure that you do it a certain number of times. So what kind of loop does that sound like? A for loop, exactly. You could do it in a while loop. You could have a while loop where you have a variable that's the number of hashtags you want to draw, and then you can decrement that every time in the loop and have the loop be like, while number of hashtags is greater than 0, and then you can draw a hashtag and then decrement the amount number of hashtags. That's essentially implementing a for loop, but a for loop is also a good way to go. So those are sort of two loops that you can use here. And so you're going to go through and make sure you draw the right number of hashtags across. And then what do you do when you finish drawing the hashtags? I'm doing it with my hand. It's like a typewriter. You go to a new line, yeah, backslash n. Exactly. So you're going to want to do all this within a printf, within a for loop. You make sure that you get the label, line, correct number of hashtags that you calculated, new line, label, hashtags, label, hashtags, label, hashtags. Any questions? I went through that one kind of quickly, but I think the bulk of this is math. So as long as you know how to use variables and the basic operators, you're all set with a little bit of thinking. Any other questions? I think we're done. So if you have any other questions, now's the time. Questions about any part of this problem set. I couldn't decide between the two pictures. So, but, and I think they're nicely symmetrical. Any other questions? All right, I'll stay if you end up having any other questions. Good luck on the problem set. And I hope you continue to come to these walkthroughs. It was great having you.